Welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network with me, Eric Lanigan, filling in for Ewan Rankin. But don't worry, because the regular panel of everyone is here, starting with James Hart. Hi, James.
Good evening, Eric.
How are you?
Hello, listeners. I'm okay, thank you. I've just had some coffee to perk me up because I've had a bit of a week. How are you?
Oh, I'm right there with you. I got my big old cup of coffee right here, and we'll somehow hopefully get through this show. Sarah Gray is also here. Hi, Sarah.
Hiya.
How's it going? How was the week?
It's not been a brilliant week so far. So, but yeah, hopefully it'll get better and have a good weekend.
Good. We're all having glad we're all having terrible weeks. Next is Ian Grant, also here. Hello, Ian.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing? I'm doing good this week. I've got the week off, so I'm relaxing and doing easy things.
Well, aren't you lucky? Okay. And Alex Fox is also here. Hello, Alex.
Hello, I'm going to have a great week, whatever happens.
Sounds good. Okay, so let's get right to it. Of course, the big news this week that everyone's talking about, so we don't have to do too much of it, but I think we need to cover a little bit, is the Steve Jobs biography. Lots of new facts coming out about Steve Jobs, lots of opinions, and without trying to spoil too much, what do we think about that, guys?
I just think it's nothing too surprising. I think his early life, if people don't know much about his early life, and, you know, this isn't spoiling the book because, you know, I think we all know how it ended anyway. But his earlier life, being adopted and not knowing his real father, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff. His sister, only towards the very end of his life, found out that she was the sister of Steve Jobs. I mean, there's a lot of things that, when you look into it quite deeply, you can sort of work out what made someone such a driven human being. And I think apart from all the stuff that everyone wants to read the book for, it does give you a really good idea of what made the man the type of man he was. I want to say without spoiling anything.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly his upbringing is a good indication of why he was the way he was. I watched the Stanford,
commencement address?
The lecture, yeah. Yeah, and I must admit, that actually, I wouldn't say it changed my opinion of Steve, but it definitely explained an awful lot, shall we say.
Yeah, it was really the best summary of his life that he had given up to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if, obviously this has been in a few years in the making. I wonder if Steve himself thought he would be there for the unveiling of the book, if you like. It's a pretty no-holds-barred and, you know, he's been very honest with, you know, the information he's given, and everyone's been quite honest with the information. I just wondered if he just wanted to set the record straight and, you know, because he knew he wasn't going to be around for long, but I don't think he realised he was going to be around quite so short.
I was just going to ask, is there anything that influenced the timing of the release of the book? Is it just
because... I was going to ask that as well.
You can ask me, right?
Yeah, I'm not answering if James asks, but if Sarah does, I will.
What was your question, James? What influenced the release date of the book?
I don't know. Sarah asks it so much better.
No, I mean, I must admit, it occurred to me, and I know I'm being a bit of an old cynic here, but there was a bit of me that thought, well, was this deliberately planned to, the release date's going to be just after he dies? Or am I being an old cynic?
Well, no, it was moved up a couple of times. Remember, first it was going to be early 2012, and then when he resigned, it got bumped like 6 months up to November 15th. That was when he resigned. Then when he died, it got bumped up to October 24th.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes, I'm saying, but remembering that you can't libel the dead. So, in other words, the people releasing this book could do exactly what they wanted after the point where Steve died. So if Steve had already said, I don't want it released until a certain date, he lost his right to say that after the fact.
I kind of knowing what a brilliant marketeer he was, I kind of thought whether this is... I always thought before it came out, I thought, is this going to be Steve's last hurrah as the ace marketeer?
Oh, but, sort of spinning his own story?
Well, not spinning it, but certainly, you know, we know how good he was at that kind of thing. And I thought this is his chance to have a go at anyone he wants without any issues about libel or anything. And he can say what he wants and, you know, whatever.
There is
also, if the author is quoting his words, then how could he possibly be sued if it was libelous?
You know, it's so funny that that's the first thing that you guys go to, because I know that you guys have much stricter laws over there about libel. That's not even an issue here. So it's funny. Could you guys even have an issue where, like, have you ever had, like, an American biography or something like that come out over there, and then someone there in the UK sues because it wasn't libel, even though it was published in the US, but over there it is?
No, we don't tend to do it. We don't tend to do libel suits, but they get stopped before they'll ever get published here. It all sort of gets vetted early. But the thing is, this book, it's not as flattering to Steve Jobs as if he wanted to write his own epitaph, he probably wouldn't have written this.
That's right. I would say it certainly is not a self-flattering autobiography, although...
That's what makes me think it's the truth.
Yeah, Walter Isaacson does give him the last word, as he says, you know, Steve would like to say his own words best because he likes to do that. And he did in the book, and that's interesting. Steve gets a lot of his own words, but I think Walter Isaacson was very good about going to the people that Steve talked about, even if he talked about them quite harshly, and to get their opinion as well, and then provides their side of the story right alongside Steve's.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Yeah.
But that's right. He certainly does get the last word on a couple of things. Like he says that Microsoft is largely irrelevant now.
Which is a man that doesn't understand the business market.
Yeah. So let's change gears then. Actually, anything else about his general personality or the book's revelations? Otherwise, let's switch gears into...
His style. His style was quite interesting that came out of the book. In my opinion, it's his... He had one direction, and it was full on. So it was either angry outwardly or angry inwardly. It was something that he was an incredibly emotional person, and one way or another, it was going to come out. It either came out in bursts at people or it came out internally. But he was so amazingly driven that I think he wore himself out completely. You know, and I think that's one of the things the book shows you, that, you know, he didn't get where he was because of, you know, he took it easy. He didn't live many years, but my God, did he fill them up.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't coasting at any point, was he?
No.
The book certainly does not shy away from painting him as sort of behaving as a tyrant and someone who leads by intimidation. Actually, when he came back from his medical leave, he was so brutal to everybody there, just like destroying their, you know, how he would just yell at people and just be so mean, as they would say, destroy them, make people cry. And then afterwards, on that day that he returned to work and made everyone cry, he was heard to tell someone else that this was one of the most fun days of his life. You know, that's kind of intense. That's really intense. And the more I thought about that, I do think that's the message that Isaacson, the biographer, was trying to convey there, was that he really did kind of enjoy that. It even said that at one point, some Apple executives had talked to him, I guess over the years, but they didn't name the person by name, maybe Tim Cook, I don't know. But they said that some other trusted Apple executive pulled him aside one day recently and said, you know, Steve, I know you're trying to motivate the troops here, but you're just destroying their morale. You can't just break them like this.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, because a Tim Cook is a different person and he wants to be seen as a different person. So it's going to be interesting to see the leadership direction he'll take, because he's got a very definite way that if he wants to be different, he's got a very definite way to be different. There's no ambiguity there whatsoever.
Mm. And I must admit, and I do not at all mean to be disrespectful to Steve's memory, but I only now finally believe that Apple is not influenced in any way by Steve Jobs.
How so? What do you mean?
Well, because even when he was on sick leave, I still believe that what he was doing, and he still would have had some involvement. Because as we just said, he was so intense, he was full on. He never did anything by halves. You know, if there was something that Tim Cook or the board weren't sure about, I bet they were on the phone to him saying, "Steve, what do you think about this decision?" And only now they don't have that fallback to be able to do that. I believe we're really going to see what the rest of Apple are like and what they're made of.
It's really interesting, because actually Apple could quite quickly become irrelevant without that driving force.
They could just become another computer company.
I think they also are going to have to come up with someone who's going to be a better onstage figurehead to get people excited. I mean, the excitement is not, and the passion for the product is not going to bubble up through Steve anymore. We know it's not going to come through Tim Cook, because one of the things Steve says in the biography, quoted to his biographer, is Tim Cook is not a product guy per se. End quote. We also have seen Tim Cook on stage, and we've seen other profiles of him as being unemotional, is how a lot of people describe him. So he's not going to be the charismatic guy on stage. Scott Forstall, I would say, did a very good job. Johnny Ive, when he spoke at the public celebration, eulogy, whatever you like to call it, the one where they're Coldplay and Norah Jones and everyone, Tim Cook, all were there. They talked, they played music on the Apple campus. That was on October 19th. That video is now on Apple's website for the public. Anyone can see that. It's the one where they closed down all the Apple stores around the world to simulcast that over the web to celebrate Steve Jobs and eulogize him. And Johnny Ive, I thought, in that video gave the best statement, and was the only one who got laughs, who wrote the eulogy to be funny and got laughs and got, you know, sympathetic laughs. And people, he seemed like a very interesting guy talking with a lot of passion, lots of great ideas, lots of his own ideas.
I think when you consider what Johnny does, he's probably the nearest fit to keep that Apple in the same mold going in that tone.
I think so. So would you guys then agree with me that the focus is going to have to shift from a single figurehead like Steve Jobs, through whom the passion can bubble up through the ranks, to let the individual creators, the individual people with the visions throughout their individual product categories, shine through and be the voice of their own passion and their own product ideas on stage?
Well, who's going to be put in charge of hating Google?
Oh, that's a whole department. I'm sure they're building a campus just for that.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that, James, because we also saw that Steve Jobs said, and I'm going to read this quote. You've probably heard this before, but it's a pretty big deal. He said, our lawsuit against Google is saying, Google, you effing ripped off the iPhone. Wholesale ripped us off. Grand theft. I will spend my last dying breath if I need to, and I will spend every penny of Apple's $40 billion in the bank to right this wrong. I'm going to destroy Android because it's a stolen product. I'm willing to go thermonuclear war on this. They're scared to death because they know they're guilty. Outside of search, Google's products, Android and Google Docs, are expletive. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I'm just going to say one thing on that. Pot and kettle black. Because like Apple never actually copied anything from anybody else, did they?
Well, their whole system is built on top of someone else's system.
Yeah, exactly. Rank Xerox for a start.
Yeah. OS X is entirely built on.
The whole GUI front end was designed by Xerox, and Apple copied it. And to be fair, so did Microsoft.
So contrast that statement. Contrast about Steve Jobs saying they ripped us off, they stole it, it's a stolen product, grand theft. Compare that to what Steve said in 1995 for that famous Robert X. Kearnsley interview, where he got Steve to say, here's his quote, ultimately it comes down to taste. It comes down to trying to expose yourself to the best things that humans have done and try to bring those things into what you're doing. Picasso had a saying, good artists copy, great artists steal. And we've always been shameless about stealing great ideas.
But that's the whole point. That's the bit that what actually makes it a contradiction. You can't have it one way. You've either got to have it one way or the other.
Well, you've got to also remember. Sorry.
I actually agree with the idea of, you know, that's how we progress, is by, you know, building on top of something what somebody else has already done.
So what do you guys think? I mean, now they have, just yesterday, Apple was awarded the patent for Swipe to Unlock, which is a patent that is used, that is very easily argued to be in violation of on every Android device, every Windows phone, Windows 8. I mean, everything is now implemented some kind of Swipe to Unlock. So do you think they're now going to go after those guys? Do you think Apple is now, in Steve's absence, going to wage that thermonuclear war?
It's for one tiny part.
Well, I don't know, Sarah. I mean, it's one part of many patents, though. They're suing a lot of people.
Yeah, that sort of goes to explain why he said one thing in 95 and another thing in, well, we get to hear about it in 2011. Because in those 16 years, if my maths is right, the world has changed. 16 years ago, you wouldn't have sued somebody for doing what Apple are suing everyone for doing. 16 years ago, there was no point in raging because there was nothing to gain out of losing your temper 16 years ago because of it was just the way technology worked. I mean, somebody developed a system, somebody else copied it. It was blatant because of nobody really saw there was anything wrong with it. I mean, next, Apple are going to say, you know, we're going to sue everyone because of, you know, you turn your door handle to the right to open it. I mean, swipe to open a locked screen is pretty much about the only way you can do it.
That's exactly my thought. I mean, this is from their actual quote of this patent. They write, a device with a touch-sensitive display may be unlocked via gestures performed on the touch-sensitive display. Well, how else are you going to do it? If there are no buttons and you have a touch display, of course you're going to do something by working with the touch display.
No, I could think of another way.
You could touch it gently.
Well, no. Who says anything about touch? Why, you know, certainly on my Nexus S.
Lick to unlock. Yeah, that'd be great.
hang on a minute, guys. Here, there are plenty of ways of doing this. On my Nexus S, as I'm sure on a lot of phones, there's a button. If I've actually pick up the phone, the first thing I do is press the button, not swipe the screen, because I've got to make the screen come on. So why can't they actually make, you know, Android have it so that instead of having to swipe the phone, which I have to because it's locked, because I've got a passcode on it, why can't you just have it so you press the button on the side? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, or a little clicky switch like you have on.
Well, would that be a button, though, that could be activated by your pocket?
That's true.
What was the problem with them?
I'd have a control, alt, and delete key on the front.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have a macro to unlock your phone. No, but that is the point, though, isn't it? I mean, it was accepted that there was one or two ways of doing things a while ago. Because this is deemed as a new technology, I mean, and when I say deemed, I was trying to work out when it was. I was in Switzerland about... It's got to be 30 years ago. And whenever the tourist information shop shut, there was a touch-sensitive window outside that you touched the window and you could change all the maps and things that you could see through the window so you could work out where you're going. And I'm talking about 30 years ago. So should the Swiss tourist information go and sue Apple for the use of touching a piece of glass to change the view that you were looking at? You know, it's just the fact that technology moves and, you know, someone will come up with something soon. Someone will be able to beam into your brain and you'll be able to unlock by thought or something. And then are we going to have our thoughts monetized after that?
Exactly. It's getting totally silly. I mean, this whole thing about one company suing another for this tiny infringement of patent. I mean, get real. Let's go back to where we were. You know, as any programmer will tell you, I'm no different. I can look at a piece of software and think, yeah, that's a good idea. And then I'll come up with something that actually builds on top of that and develop it myself. That's what developers do.
Right.
Of course innovation's been, though, hasn't it? That's what innovation's been all this time.
Absolutely, yeah.
You see a good idea and you think, I'll borrow that, then build on it.
Yeah, and develop it further. So you're building on the shoulders of giants all the time, aren't you?
That's evolution, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. My thoughts exactly. Especially in the case of Apple, where Apple, by nature, sits and thinks and rethinks and perfects something until they've hit the absolute simplest, most intuitive way to do it. So what are they going to do? Patent the way that is most similar to the way the human mind actually works? What chance does that give the world to progress with each other?
Well, it depends if you're religious. If you're religious, then you can get God to sue them for taking away. I mean, I always thought about this business with the swipe and these gestures.
Do you mean smite to unlock?
I was thinking of suing Apple because they have not made a gesture on a trackpad that would work if I'd been in an accident and was disabled. So I think I'm going to sue them on anti-disabled... whatever the word is, because if I can't do it, well, I can, but if I'd lost some fingers, I wouldn't be able to do a four-finger pinch.
Actually, Alex, I have to say that the iPhone, when it comes to accessibility, and I know because I do a lot of work with accessibility at work is with what I do, the iPhone is by far and away the best phone for that.
Okay, I'm going to sue them for not taking into account my stupidity.
Okay, so Apple has
enough said.
So Apple has a patent on this, the swipe to unlock, left to right, and the feedback mechanism to give you... That's actually the quote. There is a need for sensory feedback to the user regarding progress towards satisfaction of a user input condition that is required for the transition to occur. Obvious, right? Yeah. I think that's describing is that a little thing, an icon, some kind of graphic follows your finger to indicate that you are doing something, right? So if that's all that they were, if that's the entire thrust of their patent here, look at the other thing that they've added then. They added this, the swipe down to bring up the notification center in iOS 5. That's not theirs. That was an Android. I forget whether it was Android that first came up with that, but they clearly took that from other people because Apple was not the first, by years, not the first, to have a swipe from off the screen to on the screen. So why do they think they can just steal that from someone else?
Well, the money made at the moment in technology is going to be mainly made in suing people for patents.
I was
going to
say, through lawyers.
And making some ridiculous... I mean, I could sit... Well, we could all sit here and we could come up with these ridiculous patents for something that might be invented in the future. Because at the moment, you don't even need to invent it. You need to invent the idea. Now, I use the idea of using your brain to unlock the phone. Now, if anyone ever does that, now we've gone live. What do I do? Sue them for 50 billion, trillion, gazillion, whatever's going to be there when they've done it? It's nonsense. Mm. And if you look at some of this technology... 20, 30 years ago, I mean, I know I'm going on about disabled before, but a lot of these technologies were designed for disabilities to be able to use the very limited scope that they had of movement. So touch sensitivity and cursors following the finger and things like that are old hat. Eye recognition, being able to use something by moving your eye and the cursor following your eye, that's all been done. Now, when Apple start to come out with you can use your camera on your iPhone to change something, who are they going to sue for that? Because some medical research company could sue them for practically everything that they claim they've invented now.
Speaking of patent holders going after Android, how many would you estimate, if you haven't seen this headline from yesterday, how many Android manufacturers, the percentage of the Android, of all the Android manufacturers, would you estimate that Microsoft is currently receiving royalties from for their use of Android?
87.5%.
Close.
Ish.
Well, not close. It's over half. It's now over 50%. 50% of all Android OEMs and ODMs, which ODM is a term that's new to me. Apparently, it means they don't actually put their own brand name on the device.
Original device manufacturers, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to original equipment manufacturers, like that's really a different word. But that is the distinction, though. So 53% of one of those and 55% of the other, 53% of the OEMs, 55% of the ODMs are now paying Microsoft royalties. This is from Microsoft's legal blog, their tech site. Their general counsel posted this and says, and is crowing over the fact that he says, quote, today's announcement means that companies accounting for more than half of all Android devices have now entered into the patent license agreements with Microsoft. And he says, clearly this provides a clear path forward. So what do you think?
Cha-ching.
What's going to happen here? Is everyone just going to sue everybody, and then we're going to end up with no ability to do any kind of open source anything?
Now, I was going to say, what will happen? There's going to be a finite amount of money that comes from us as the consumer, and it's just going to be moving from one company to another without anyone actually doing anything at all. But it's going to be transactions going from one patent dispute or one licensing agreement to another. So you're going to start off with this theoretical dollar, and every company in the world at some point is going to have use or ownership of that dollar, because it's just going to keep moving in and out and backwards and forwards, and no one's ever actually going to do anything to earn that money. It's just going to keep moving around, much the way the stock market works. The same amount of money is going to be moving around. I mean, a lot of the money that a lot of these big companies are worth on the amount of money that in the future they will get back on some of the things that they claim they've patented already. A lot of this money doesn't exist. A lot of the invention hasn't even been done. But, you know, they'd say within 20 years this is going to be worth a $20 billion patent. So the company is now valued at an extra $20 billion. So this money is just going to move from one company to another without anyone ever actually producing anything.
Your rants make me want to play the guitar softly, Alex.
I can actually go further than that on the soapbox.
Oh, no.
And say, but basically, these patents are from lawyers in companies who say to boards, I think we've got a case here. Let's go after X, Y, and Z company. And all it's doing is passing money around legal firms. And it's going backwards and forwards, generating more work. And these boards need to get a hold of it and say, hang on a minute, this is just going nowhere. Let's forget this, and we're going to do it anyway.
I agree, Sarah. I think a lot of the money is ending up just going to the legal battle itself, whether it's to the lawyers or to the ancillary costs of the litigation. I mean, the end game for most of these suits is some kind of cross-licensing, which is usually more or less a peering arrangement. Usually the money changes hands pretty symmetrically. The two companies agree to license each other's patents to each other. And so they end up not really changing much money over the years after the agreement has been reached. But all that money and time and resources are being poured into fighting it in the battles, court after court, circuit to circuit, country by country. And in the end, they just agree to do that anyway.
And while the only people that win are the lawyers, because they're lawyers' fees.
Right. And while all that was happening, the fact that they copied each other's technology ends up not mattering at all. They end up having to innovate. They end up having to out-innovate each other and assume that the others are going to copy their good ideas anyway, because by the time the lawsuits are resolved years later, they just agree to use the technology anyway. It's very rare that they say that they actually get a piece of technology pulled from a product. So it's like, what's the point in the end?
There is none at all.
And when you think about the fact of how far we came in the 80s, and to some extent in the 90s, and in the last 10 years or so, we've just been going around in blooming circles because each company's afraid of, you know, stamping on someone else's toes instead of actually trying to innovate.
Well, I'll tell you what the difference between now and the 80s were. In the 80s, what you needed to do is things weren't fast enough and they weren't quick enough to do the jobs that we needed them to do. You know, every 6 months, the processes had to double because we needed them to, because of what we were trying to do, we never had the power to do. At the moment, what our imagination tells us we need, we've got the power to do. So the only advances are tiny nuances. You know, whether you swipe or whether you swipe up, down, left or right, or how smoothly your fonts move across the screen. In those days, I can hear a guitar. I've got a piano. Should we duet?
But yeah, just playing soothing music while you ranted. Sorry.
No, but so that's where the innovation has gone. The actual need for a real difference has slightly disappeared. It's all nuances, and the nuances are: is your phone shinier than mine? Does it? You know, it takes a picture. It takes just as bad a picture as my phone does. You know, and, you know, we're used to lesser quality in so many things because it's been shrunk down. But, I mean, that's where the problem is.
Well, I have to come back to you on that, Alex. I think if you were to go to any of those trade shows over the last 3 or 4 years, everything has been a sort of continuation of the development of these things, as you say, smaller and shinier and different edges and stuff. And the iPhone 4 in itself was quite revolutionary in its style with the curved edges and the flat bits and stuff like that. But as soon as something comes out which is so far, I think we've almost become numb to it. So as soon as something gets innovated, something gets created, which is so far left field of everything else, everybody just goes, ugh, that's horrible. And it ends up being just eliminated, forgotten about, which is the real problem, because people are so focused on this motorway of absolute constant development.
That's a fantastic
point. Innovation actually isn't happening at all.
Now, I mean, this is going to move the subject on to something else that I know we wanted to talk about anyway, but a good case in point is I'm sitting there holding a Nokia 95, right? Now, it's a square box, right? The camera in this phone is still better than the camera I've got in an iPhone 4. You know, it's 5 megapixel, but it's a better 5 megapixel than the iPhone 4. How old's this camera? This thing, how old's this phone? This thing makes a good phone call. Well, iPhone 4 doesn't. You know, this thing does a lot of things, but it's square, it's bulky, but it's got really nice sliding action. And what's happened is I think we're mixing too many things together. I mean, Nokia have just brought out a new phone. They've just brought out Windows 7. I've written a couple of things about it, so I've got a couple of things to say when it comes up. But people are kicking Nokia because of they're not iPhone. And I'd like to say, why is that a bad thing? Why not being...
isn't a bad thing.
That's the point.
Nokia were always different, always better.
Yeah, but right now, the last 6 months, last year, Nokia have been given a kicking after a kicking after a kicking for making a phone, not for anything else just because they're not making an iPhone copy. And that's why they're getting a kick in. So you talk about innovation. Innovation these days is someone is the leader. We're told that we must. I mean, I've got an iPhone 4, and to be honest, I don't like the damn thing, but I got into the iPhone 4 because that's what I felt that I was supposed to have as my next phone. But if I want to make a phone call, no blooming way I want to use an iPhone 4. So you get a company like Nokia, a good established company built on good ethics and good practice and everything else. And now they've brought out something, and they've just been forced to bring out something to try and be the same as everybody else to stand a chance in hell of survival. So who would believe that Nokia are fighting for their lives?
I'm intrigued, Alex. What kind of innovation do you see when you say they're just trying to be an iPhone clone and that's a bad thing? What exactly are you referring to? I take it you mean something other than smooth fonts or an app ecosystem. What do you think is a bad thing that you feel sorry for them that they feel that they have to emulate?
Because now they're not now making a phone anymore. They're making an iPhone copy. When they made a phone,
a PC basically.
That's the trouble. Is everybody now is trying to make something that is a computer that fits in the palm of your hand and you can move your fingers around and you'll do things in a very similar way to everything else. There's very, very few people that, you know, you can say innovation is not making something that's iPhone-like.
Well, I guess what else would you do, though? They are still making a bunch of feature phones for the low-end markets around the world, so they do have some dumb phones, you might say, not smartphones. But in the case of smartphones, don't you want a robust application and third-party software ecosystem?
Yeah, well, that's sort of where I'm going. We're told that we need to have a smartphone. Now, you don't need to have a smartphone. You need a phone that makes a phone call. It's quite handy to be able to surf the web a bit, and it's very useful to be able to get your emails. You know, you don't need to be able to play 500 different games. You don't need to. There's so many things you don't need to do that we've all fallen into the trap of believing that that's what your phone is supposed to be now. It's supposed to be a computer that makes phone calls. Now, you use the word low-end phone. I disagree it's a low-end phone. I think it's a high-end phone. This is a low-end computer that makes bad phone calls.
Which one? Mr. Fox.
Beg your pardon?
I said, hello, you, Mr. Fox. Spot on.
Thank you.
proper. I miss a proper phone that the battery lasts more than a day. That you can fish out your phone and make a phone call.
You can drop
email on it. You can drop and it doesn't break. Which we still issue to our sort of reps and our people that work outside. What you'd consider a dumb phone, but they last forever. But they can't kill them. They can't break them. There's no big bit of glass in it to smash. It's fantastic. They do a job well. I mean, I was using an E71 until I eventually succumbed to, I must have a smartphone because everybody else has one, and got myself this my Samsung Omnia. But it is, you don't need a fancy phone. My E71 was a superb phone. Good camera, everything else.
So what do we think of these new Nokia Windows Phone 7s, however you're supposed to say it? I have no idea.
I just want to pop very quickly. Patriarch in the chat room says Nokia needs to diversify their product line like any other company, need to make something appeal to the higher end consumers. You're absolutely right there. However, everybody seems to aspire to this rectangle, and it's the fact I think it's the Apple reality distortion field that is causing this. And as you say, it comes back down to the fact that these machines. All you really actually need them to do is make phone calls. But you aspire to have something. You aspire to this thing. So the Nokia phone, whether it's good or not, is probably just trying to compete. And actually, it will fail miserably if it doesn't compete, which is a real shame. And it looks really nice. I have to say that. And it comes in some bright colours, which is good.
I have to say, though, guys, Alex and James, I'm not seeing the bad part of that. Why do you say it's bad that phones feel pressured into being application phones or smartphones or phones that have no buttons?
It's not that one. I completely reject the phone that has no buttons because I am desperate for a proper keyboard. You know, almost to the point where I'm ordering a work phone and I'm going, if only the BlackBerry business tariffs weren't ridiculous, I would actually get one for work because I like typing on a proper keyboard. I am absolutely sick of it. And my dad's got an HTC Char Char, and actually I quite like it because it's got a keyboard on it. So, however, the high-end phones you get, the Galaxy S2s, the iPhone 4s, and this Nokia thing, none of them have got bloody keyboards on them.
I'll tell you what, James, if you want, I've got a Palm Pre kicking around here. I can let you have.
At a very reasonable price. No, I'd say my problem is, I got some sort of, it's a daft thing to say, but I've got some emotion for Nokia. I mean, the way the company was built, the whole idea of the company, the ethos of giving all the money away. You know, the whole thing was a really nice way of running a business for me. But it's because of they did nothing wrong. They still make really good phones that really work. They make good phone calls. You don't drop this. It's based on being able to communicate. You know, there's a box that you put to your ear and you press a few buttons and you can talk to the person you need to talk to. But they've more or less as a company been destroyed because of the world has been told that what they make is not good enough because of other people make things that are fancier and smarter and this, that and the other. But you don't necessarily need that fancy and smart nonsense. You can have it. If you want a phone to do you can have a phone to do everything you possibly ever wanted and it won't do any of them particularly brilliantly, but it will be able to do everything. Or you could have maybe two devices. Why not get an iPod Touch that does all these fancy, silly things and a phone to make phone calls? I don't know. It just, to me, it's this idea that everything has to be in one box and that one box has to do everything.
And I have to say, Alex, the whole thing of having two boxes, I did that for years and it drove me potty, which is why I ended up getting a smartphone this time around so I could have me iTunes and me everything else all sat in one thing in my pocket.
Yeah, I mean, that's so another case.
I'm kind of arguing against myself, but...
No, but I mean, I think
I have to say, I like having one device that can do apps, web browsing, and be an iPod. And make phone calls when it can.
When it can. I mean, as a business user, there's nothing more frustrating. The amount of times I've stood in the... I try very hard not to swear. The amount of times I've been caught standing in the street swearing at the top of my voice because I can't make a damn phone call. And I'm like, yeah, but I can listen to the 500 audiobooks and I can play various games that I don't know what they are because the kids have put them on. And I can do all these things perfectly well, but I can't make a blooming living because my phone don't work. Rant over, sorry.
Well, okay, certainly that, yeah, I agree with you that Apple needs to get the phone part right first, and they've been a little bit, they've kind of deprioritized the making of phone calls, unfortunately, just going back to the original iPhone. I think that's still kind of the case. It's tough to get into this particular argument because my gut feeling, though, is that I think the future, I mean, Moore's Law just dictates that eventually all phones will be able to be app phones, smartphones with apps and full web experience and all that stuff. Whether or not they'll all have data plans, whether or not they'll all have completely button-free front faces that are just Gorilla Glass, that I'm not sure about. But I think Nokia does still make feature phones, and now they're trying to their first iPhone and Windows Phone and Android competitor. So let's talk about that. Do you think they stand a chance in any competitive environment with this first round of Windows Phone 7s? Do you think that they compete with other Windows 7 phones? Do you think they compete with Android, Ice Cream Sandwich, or Apple?
As a Windows 7 phone, they're not quite as good as the new as the sort of the Samsungs and the HTCs for me, just because the screens are smaller. I know, James, you like a smaller screen, but 4 inches is becoming sort of quite attractive in terms of being a really sort of nice size, which gives you good compromise between having something big that sits in your pocket but still big enough to like web browse, or in my case, using it as a book reader these days. So in that respect, I think that the screen size might be a little bit of a disappointment going down to 3.7, but as a device, Nokia, I think, is a company that's finally going to push Windows 7 a bit more into the marketplace. Because everybody when they go to a phone shop, we've got these nice Nokia phones. And everyone knows a Nokia. We've all had Nokia phones over the years. We're going to go, oh, great, it's a Nokia. Yeah, I trust Nokia. You know, and that's going to persuade quite a few people to buy one that I think maybe wouldn't have before.
That's a good point, Ian, and I suspect that that's why they have not released these phones yet in the United States, because in the United States, the Nokia brand name is almost at the bottom of the line now. And I don't think that these phones with these specs that they've announced now, which seem to be roughly the price of an iPhone or a similar Android device, they're missing some key hardware specs that I don't think will be enough to win the average customer over. For instance, they have no gyroscope, which has become crucial for playing most advanced games. They have no front-facing camera, so no video chat, but at all. And they have a relatively low-resolution camera compared to other Windows phones or Apple.
It's got an 8-megapixel camera in it, and it's Carl Zeiss optics. I don't know if that means anything, Alex. You probably know better than me.
Well, no,
it did once upon a time, but not anymore.
Yeah, the specs that I have say that it's a 5-megapixel camera.
It depends which one. The 8.
Don't get me started on megapixels in a camera. The bigger the megapixels in a camera, the bigger the crap the picture.
Well, yeah, but I think we can agree that the new iPhone 4S probably is the best camera ever in a phone, right?
Yeah, but I mean, do you know what? You know what Nokia should do? They should make a phone that makes a phone call, right? They should make it rugged as hell and stick a really decent camera in it. Forget all this other rubbish, right? Because you could have something that, in its own right, stands up on its own. You can make a phone call, you can drop it and kick it across the floor, and you can take a proper picture with it. There's a market for them. A rugged camera which has got a phone in it.
I think they should just build a phone into a DSLR.
Well, you can probably get a little SIM chip for a DSLR. I think Alex makes a good point. And actually, one extra thing they could do is put some decent navigation software on it so you don't need a TomTom. So at least you've got two things you can take out with you. You're going travelling and you're going to be taking photos when you're out there, and you've got a tool with you rather than they call them appliances.
Yeah, stick a Swiss Army knife in the back and you'll never need anything ever again.
Exactly.
Now, James, did you know that actually is there? And that is a part of the Nokia has their own special TomTom competitive navigation app it reads to you out loud and it also has a 3D top-down view. So it's your full-on GPS that will be free with every one of these Nokia Windows 7 phones. So I think that is something
It could be going the right way on that one then. Because, I mean, I was just reflecting on this. My brother's just got one of the newest TomTom navigators that reads out the street names to you. And I was thinking to myself, I've got that already in my Android phone, but I can't put it anywhere on my dashboard because if it flies off, it will smash.
Yeah. So you need the G.I. Joe Nokia phone camera, a survival kit phone. That's what we need.
And we all know that as soon as you get a phone, you get a nice leather case which doubles the width of the bloody thing to put it in.
Yeah, I mean,
if they've got it right, they've put a nice rugged case for it that you don't need. Oh, it's crazy.
Sony Ericsson today announced that they are going to stop being Sony Ericsson. Sony has bought out the Ericsson side for, I believe, $1.5 billion. Thoughts on that?
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Mr. Ericsson's going to be a very rich man.
I mean, that to me, that says one thing, is that Sony are unhappy with the partnership and that they want to push it in the direction they want to go.
Well, they haven't made a good phone for at least 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and it says that probably that they're having the relationship between them and Ericsson aren't that good, and they and Sony just want to control the partnership themselves.
Do you guys happen to know, because I haven't followed Sony Ericsson, what does each of them bring to that partnership?
Ericsson made phones and Sony stuck their label on it. That's how it originally worked.
Oh.
Ericsson were as big as Nokia.
It was like I think Sony introduced the Walkman phone, didn't they? I mean, Sony used to make mobile phones back in the FM, the AM. The
yeah,
FM
yeah, they were really expensive as well, really expensive. Yeah.
But I think obviously they teamed up for the application.
Well, I think Sony might be trying to say, if you take away the Ericsson, you take away sort of the phone part of it, so maybe they can build a PSP-style phone and it will have a Sony branding, so it will be a PlayStation-ish phone. So it will be a game.
Ericsson bigger.
No, but, you know, as soon as you've got the word Ericsson on it, it's no longer the Sony brand as such. That's a phone. Sony Ericsson make phones, but Sony make gaming devices. So possibly they want to make a gaming device that you can make phone calls, and it will be recognized as a gaming device to make phone calls on, as opposed to a phone that you play games on.
That's a good point, Alex. I mean, I was joking a second ago when I said one of the biggest features now is a camera in your phone. So why not just take a DSLR, stick a SIM chip in it, make that your camera, a DSLR that makes calls. But you have a good point there. Why wouldn't they take their new PlayStation Vita, their new little PSP successor, and just turn that into a phone? And you put it up to your ear and you're making calls with a SIM card. You know, that seems like something they might want to do.
Yeah, and in the Ericsson, I mean, you can lose the Ericsson, but the only trouble is if they use swipe to open, they're going to get in trouble.
Exactly. One other phone story in the news, RIM continues to have all kinds of trouble. I think, James, you said you have some info on they're being sued now. I hadn't heard that, but I did see that they...
America and Canada are both doing a class action lawsuit saying that they denied them the service. I think it's a little bit harsh, to be honest with you, especially since there's, you know, it's like kicking a horse when it's down. It's just like, right, now so, you've got it. It's and they want millions off them.
So they just had a week of outages, or I think it was about a week, pissed everyone off. That's why they're doing this. That's why they're suing. They also just the other day announced that they've pushed back the release date for their BlackBerry Playbook OS 2.0 to February. So that means that it'll be until February before Playbook owners even get a native calendar or email application that does not require tethering to a BlackBerry phone product, and just to make the Playbook even usable. And even when February arrives, it still will not support BBM, which is one of the biggest reasons to own a BlackBerry branded device. What do you guys make of that?
They misstep after misstep.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something today on the...
Can they ever come back from this?
Well, I mean...
This is so wedded to them.
Well, that's the thing. They were wedded to it. And now, I mean, I was reading something today on the BBC website, and people are saying, businessmen are saying, you know, these were business phones, and now they're Yob Writer phones with BBM. It's lost its credibility within the business market. Now the iPhones, etc., they have got a lot more security involved, and you know, one of the things BlackBerry were for was, you know, there was a security, you believe that no one could infiltrate your data on a BlackBerry.
They can't still,
they've given away the codings to certain countries
and certain governments.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that has happened is all the other people have raised their game to a level where people are more confident with the fact that they're less likely to be infiltrated on various other devices. And you know, I really do think the kicking BlackBerry has had, a lot of it is to do with this. It's turned into a cheap-ish kids. Peripheral, if you like. It's the BBM. One of the things that they've you know, sold a lot of them on is the very thing that some of their business people are losing faith with.
And the interesting thing is, of course, you've got iOS 5 with iMessage, which could be trying to steal a march on BBM. And if that works...
I mean, I don't know how BBM works, as in, is it text only? But, I mean, I've been using iMessage because it's available.
From what I hear, it's exactly the same as iMessage. You've got or another way to say it is that iMessage exactly copied. Here again, Apple. Apple is not, you know, you tell me none of that's patented? Come on, Apple. So they just totally blatantly stole BBM. They've got read receipts, send receipts, full multimedia with videos, text, and pictures.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the multimedia part. Now, I always objected to the fact that if I wanted to send a picture via text, didn't matter how many bundles of whatever I had, they were still going to charge me on top.
They'd charge you for it, yeah.
And there's very, very few places where I haven't... I mean, even when I've been out to send a picture, and, of course, my data package is sufficient to send hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures, and I don't actually get charged on top of it. The only people I feel incredibly sorry for is the pricing of these phones were all designed for the companies to make their money back on all the other bits that they'd be able to charge on top of their basic rate. Now, if people aren't going to be... you can give as many texts away as you like, because that didn't matter, but if you're not going to get anything from multimedia messaging anymore, how long until we have to start paying an awful lot more for our monthly subscription to the companies for them to make back all that money that they're now losing because Apple have decided to usurp the deal that they made with them originally? All that's going to happen is our monthly contracts are going to go up to compensate for having iMessage.
Oh, you think? You think they're going to start charging more for... Well, we know for data, but you think maybe on voice minutes? Where are they going to make that up?
Well, that's the point. I mean, multimedia messaging, I don't know what I pay for it, because I got so annoyed about it, I'd send an email rather than anything else. But, I mean, are they 20... And in the UK, they might be 25 pence each. So I don't know what you pay for them in the States. So, I mean, originally, when you were on these No Limit, what they did, it was the equivalent of 4 text messages. But now they bundle all the text messages for free. They couldn't make any money back on the text messages. So that's the issue. The only way they're going to make that, even if it's 5% back, is to actually up what we pay every month.
I think that, yeah, you're right. They may have to do something like that because according to this article from the New York Times from earlier this month, it's a $20 billion industry in the U.S. alone, with Verizon Wireless getting by themselves $7 billion a year from texting. AT&T recently upped the price of their minimum texting subscription to $30 a month minimum. If you don't pay that, then you pay a la carte for each message, 10 cents, yeah. sent, 10 cents to send and 10 cents to receive, which amounts, according to a researcher, to a 4,000% price markup, because he says it costs a third of a penny to send these messages that then they charge up to 40 cents a piece on both sides, 20 and 20. So, yeah, this is going to be very disruptive.
I mean, it strikes me. I was reading something to do, I think it was Verizon. Are they the new people to get the BlackBerry, or is it Sprint? I can't remember which. Not the BlackBerry, the iPhone.
Sprint is the brand new one.
Yeah, is that the brand new one? Because they were basically saying that I think they've just gone to the stock market to try and raise some money because they're in really big trouble because they didn't realize how much taking the iPhone was actually going to cost them.
Yeah, you know, Sprint is losing money. Sprint is losing money on every iPhone until the next, like, 3 or 4 years out.
So the next time we say, I wonder, how is Apple making all this money? They're making all this money by making everyone else lose money.
Oh, absolutely. Apple has been just brutal in negotiations. I mean, here they picked up their third carrier in the United States, Sprint, and they somehow negotiated so that Sprint is losing money through about 4 years on every iPhone sold. They will lose money on the deal. I mean, wow.
So you know what? It goes back to something like Nokia then. Why don't the telephone companies – oh, that's a really old word, isn't it? Why don't the providers go to someone like Nokia and say, make something half decent, right? Cut us a good deal and we will promote the hell out of you. We will promote anyone that isn't iPhone. We will do anything we can to make you as big as possible. Because it doesn't matter how good a phone is, how brilliant the iPhone is. If every company said, yeah, okay, the iPhone's $30 a month, but you can have this for $10 a month, and it might not be as good, but it's got an excellent camera. You can chuck it down the stairs. You can go scuba. You can do whatever you want. They need to pick up the baton and help companies like Nokia to get back in there, because it's in their own interests to do it.
But I don't think the telecom service providers are really interested in anybody else but themselves. And although, yes, you're right, Apple have done a really good deal with quite a lot of the companies, they're still the telcos are still after money. Nothing more than that. They will try and maximize their profits. They're not interested in the customer. They're not interested in the brands. They're just interested in providing phone services to as many people at the cheapest price possible.
So at the highest price possible.
And incidentally, for 10 cents, as we know, a text, that works out at $535 a megabyte.
That's mad.
Actually, wait, what would you say, James? Because I got what the New York Times worked out, that it was $1,500 a megabyte.
Well, that's for a 10 cent, exactly, yeah. For a 10 cent, sending a text, it's 500. So if you have to multiply that by a number, yes, absolutely. It's ridiculous.
But remember, they get both ends of that as well, because you pay to receive it.
Right, so $1,500 a message over the text plan, and they work it out that same equivalent of a megabyte of traffic over the data plan costs 1.25 cents.
Wow.
4,000% markup. Or actually, no, that's just for it costs them a third of a penny to actually send each text because it goes over a fairly empty a control channel for the voice system. Any other stories that we may be missing before we go into cool thingies?
Just a shout out that XP celebrated its 10th birthday. Windows XP celebrated its 10th birthday.
Windows XP still going.
Still going strong. Businesses like the one I work for still don't really want to get rid of it unless they have to. Surprising, really. It's lasted this long.
Does that mean that a couple of years XP is going to get acne?
Probably.
Are they still supporting it? Are they still releasing security updates?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, I got a couple the other day.
And when's the new cutoff date for that? When did they officially put it out to pasture?
2014, I think.
And in 2014, when half of us have still got it, they'll say, let's make it 2018.
Now, 2014, let's think, that would be the equivalent of using Windows 3.1 in what year?
That's bad, Eric. You start making those comparisons.
It'd be like using Windows 3.1 in like 2005. Yeah. It's like, yeah. I want to load my iPod Nano with video onto my Windows 3.1 machine to sync it. That just strikes me as so bizarre that technology in some ways has stagnated like it has.
But this is the crazy thing about Windows XP, is that you can't put it on a modern machine because you get a modern machine's got 8 gig of memory. XP can't see all that amount of memory.
It was 2, wasn't it? Was it 2 gig exactly. It could cope with?
No, 4. It can take a maximum of 4 if you've got 64-bit version. Otherwise, 3 and a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's 3 point something, isn't it? Yeah, if you're on 32-bit, yeah.
But the thing is, I rely on Windows XP. I rely on Windows XP because I've got Yamaha sound gear. And when Yamaha make a product, they make a product for a certain amount of time, they get drivers for it, and then they make something completely different. And you have to buy new gear to make it work with Windows 7. So I'm stuck with it, and I'm reasonably happy.
I have still got an old machine running Windows 98 because I've still got a website that uses a security thing that Barclay in San Francisco, the university? They came out with a security system, and it still runs safe TP. We're not safe FTP, it's a different thing called safe TP. And you have to run it on Windows 98. So I've still got a machine that if ever I want to update the website, I have to do it on a Windows 98 machine. And you know what? It starts quicker on my Lion machine.
You know what though, Alex, what you could do though is you could actually run it in a VM.
I've got a VM in 98 and it's a real problem.
Okay.
Just a thought. No, you're completely right. I even got 95 on it, and that was really, really difficult. But there's a few problems with VMs. But, okay. There's something about old Windows. It maybe it's nostalgia. I don't know. But there's something about using them. And even the things that bothered me at the time don't bother me anymore. They make me smile.
How quickly we cling to the Fisher-Price interface we once abused.
That's what XP is.
It's what once was our hated foreign nemesis has become our comfort blanket.
I read about.
Give me Windows 2000 any day.
Have we got any cool thingies, James?
I have one. It's a cheapo cool thingy, and I dare say there are better on the market. But allow me to paint you a picture. My children have just got new PCs to do their homework with, but the lighting in our lounge is one of these dimmer candle bulb things in the middle of the room, and therefore there just isn't enough light in the evenings on the keyboards. And I didn't want to start putting lights on the walls and stuff like that, so what we've done is we've bought some little USB LED lamp things, and they're £2.50 off Amazon, and we've bought 4 of them, and we're basically just lighting the place up like a Christmas tree. And I thought, you can't do much worse than LED lights. I've just posted a link in the chat room. They're sold by, hang on a second, let me just go back. Newer, Newer. And they're really surprisingly bright. And if I was on camera this evening, I would have had them lighting me up like a
Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Do you make your kids wear gloves in bed when it's cold?
It's October. You don't put the heating on until January.
Interesting, guys. I've just seen on a tweet a story about HP. I know we've moved off the stories, but it's quite interesting.
Wait, what did you see?
HP U-turn to keep PCs and tablets.
That was a couple of days ago they were talking about that.
Okay.
That's disappointing.
Oh, yeah. Late breaking news. HP says that it will keep its personal computer division backing away from its former CEO's proposal to spin the unit off into a standalone company.
I think you answered the question in that statement of former CEO.
Yeah, I think we covered that before on a previous show.
Let's see. I wonder what they're doing with WebOS if they change that strategy.
No, they won't keep that, I don't think.
The word tablet and WebOS, neither word appears in this story, just doing a quick word search. So it sounds like they're only talking about the desktop and laptop PC business, but still very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know from what we're doing, but I just thought I'd mention it since it's quite important.
Sarah, cool thingy.
I don't actually have one, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. Let's see, who's else? Ian.
Oh, I've got a cool thing. Sarah, you'll be proud. I've been playing around with your Ubuntu. Ubuntu 11 server. I built a LAMP server to put Joomla on. LAMP, for those that don't know, is, let's get this right, it's Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. And it's basically just a built-in web server. It's a full web server suite. You just, all I did was, and it took me 20 minutes to build this thing. I was amazed. Literally banged a CD in. So it was a VM. It went away, churned away, installed itself. What do I want? There was a list of options, text options. I picked the one I want, clicky, clicky, off it went. I used the documentation from Ubuntu's website to set up a Samba share, which is Microsoft sort of networking, so we could get our guys could get to it. And then we installed Joomla on it, and that took an hour at most to get all that set up.
Brilliant.
And brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Is it the new 11.10?
Yeah, the new 11.10, yeah.
Cool. Oh, fantastic. Presumably you installed the desktop version, did you?
No, the full server server. No, Gilbert.
Oh, right, okay. Fine. That does come with LAMP, doesn't it? Yeah.
That comes with LAMP.
I did exactly that last week. And tried to migrate from my Macs, because I've managed to install Apache 2 on my Mac and on 10.5, and I wanted to migrate my Joomla website, and the version of PHP is too new for the website, so I've got to completely destroy it and start it off again. So I'm taking Ian's advice, and I'm going to start again, I think.
It took us so little time, I was shocked and amazed. So Ubuntu, generally 11, is my cool thingy of the week.
Yeah. And what's the code name for that? Is it like Onery Ocelot or something?
Yes, that's right. It's Onerick Ocelot.
I love the code names. All right, Alex Fox, cool thingy?
Yeah, I have. It's quite simple, and I don't think you can get it in the States. But my brother is staying with us at the moment, and he uses a Vodafone, which is a... one of the many providers we have for telecommunications in this country, unlike in the States. And he has a box, right, and I think it's fantastic, and it's called a Shure Signal Box, and it plugs into the broadband. And if at any time his phone hasn't got a good enough signal, this box, I don't know if the signal comes from Vodafone to the box via the internet, but it turns on a 3G broadcast, if you like, on that box inside the house, and he can get quite a long way away from the house. And so if the signal is not very good, which his signal isn't that great where we live here, he always gets full signal on his phone in and around my house, and it goes along the internet if his signal isn't very good on his phone. And the phone, he knows no different. I just know because this box, there's some lights pop up when I know he's losing his signal, and it's been broadcast through the internet instead. And it does data, it does voice, and the whole thing is brilliant. And I wish some of other of the providers would do it, because I'd love to have one of these.
Is that one of those femtocells?
That's right.
I don't know. No, the ones I found with the other people, because I've looked them up, the ones I found on the other ones do it slightly differently. It's more of a booster. This thing, it's not a booster to the signal. It literally just takes over the signal.
Okay.
Which, I read it different. No, I read it, and it was worked differently to the others. And I was like, I wish O2 would bring this out. Because I've gone through practically every provider where I live, because they've been building sort of big buildings not that far away from me. So one by one, every provider I've got has dropped off. And, the last one standing was O2, and they're starting to get wobbly. And I'm looking at his Vodafone, and he's got, 100% all the time. And I'm sort of, do I have to now go to Vodafone and use one of these funny boxes?
As far as I know, Vodafone have been the only ones who've done the femtocells or the nanocells or the microcells, depending on how they brand
it. There you go. Does that mean I was right?
Really cool.
I was right, and that's even more important. I was right.
This is UMA is the one that the orange one used. I've just looked that up to see what that was. And licensed mobile access, apparently, is what the UMA stands for. And I think it does route it over the internet. I'm just trying to read quickly here to see what it does.
So apart from your brother actually using your broadband to make his phone calls, so it doesn't really matter, does it? It's only a little bit of data. Unless, of course, he's starting to send text messages.
Well, you know what's funny? I think it was AT&T in the United States that did this. They started offering these little femtocells, microcells, whatever they call them. And I believe this was AT&T, and I think I have the story right. They would give them to people. You could either buy them for like $350, or if you really qualified by like having constant dropped calls in a known AT&T dead zone, they would give you one for free. And then it would go over your broadband connection. It would take your 3G wireless signal, put it over your broadband if you had AT&T broadband too. But it continued to charge you for your voice minutes and penalize your data usage on your AT&T home broadband. So they still managed to get you twice.
Yeah, it's nasty. But I mean, he only paid £25 for this box. It's a one-off charge. And just to put James at rest, because he'd already paid for a BT service at where he was living and he had a two-year contract, at the moment in my house, I have a fibre optic for both Virgin at 100 and BT at whatever that is, 40. So I'm pretty well covered at the moment.
Yeah. That's very good.
I've got the BT part of that. So I've got about, I'm about 37 megabit.
Yeah, right. What does impress me, the BT output is actually upload is actually faster now than the Virgin, which I was quite impressed by.
Cool thingies all, and I have my own. My cool thingy is not cool. It's Firefox with Bing. Firefox with Bing.com.
We heard you.
This is not a joke. It's not a joke. Firefox, go right now. Firefox with Bing.com. This is a Microsoft Bing branded edition of Mozilla Firefox. And my question is, what?
WTF, I believe is the word you're looking for.
Exactly, exactly. Why would anyone download this? The one reason that Firefox became popular was because it was the anti-Microsoft browser. Who would download the special download, not just add as a plugin, but go download and install a Bingified version of Firefox?
That's as bad as saying there might be a theme for Chrome, possibly.
Do you know what you need to do, Eric? What you need to do is you need to download the installer and stick it in a safe place so that in 75 years' time, when you go back to it, you go, yes, that was the moment when Mozilla jumped the shark.
Now, get this. Now, it actually gets even weirder. It gets weirder because I was thinking that was weird enough. But as I went to that website and saw it on a Mac in Safari, I realized that the link would take me to a Mac version. So I can get the Mac version of Bing Firefox. What? Who would do that? Who would do that?
I have no idea.
Lock those people up in a straitjacket. My God. That's so weird. I mean, you can't even say that it's Microsoft employees using it internally because they get fired for not using IE. It's bizarre.
It's not some kind of anti-competitive thing, is it?
It probably is. It's probably to satisfy some requirement on paper with some government.
Yeah, but that would only work if Mozilla was the market leader. You know, I mean, I don't think Microsoft are going to be able to hijack somebody else just to make them not. No, that doesn't work. That can't be right. That's just like bullying Mozilla.
Exactly. That's the other bizarre thing about this. Mozilla is not the biggest alternative browser anymore. That title has gone to Chrome. So it's even weirder that now it's an unpopular browser, relatively, with the unpopular alternative browser with Microsoft's alternative search engine, which itself was an alternative to IE, and then using it on an alternative to Microsoft OS being a Mac. Why would anyone do that?
Yeah, Eric, on your point about Chrome being number two and what you were saying about governments, I think in government, Firefox is still seen as the second most popular browser.
Oh, really?
Yes, certainly in this country.
Is Bing the most popular search engine?
No way.
Exactly.
I know, but I'm just saying that, you know, from a government perspective, if that was true, that it was done for some kind of tick box on a ITT or something like that, then... That's certainly more plausible if it's seen as number two. I mean, we use Firefox. I just about got it accepted as a central-based application alongside IE. But Chrome is just, like, not even on the radar yet.
Interesting.
Not in a business context, at least, is it? Nowhere near.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a shame, really, because it's by far it's so much better than Firefox. I bought a new PC in the last week, and I haven't even bothered putting Firefox on it. It's Internet Explorer 9 and Chrome.
Hmm. Interestingly, you said about Bing. I think Bing might start picking up a little bit when the Windows phones become more prevalent. Because when you hit the search button on your Windows 7 phone, that is the default search engine you'll hit. So I do think that will start to pick up more as time goes on.
I was going to say, I was challenged by a friend of mine, Mr. Simon Toon, who appears on the chat room every now and then, to change my my iPod Touch's search engine to Bing instead of Google, because everybody sort of naturally gravitates to Google. And I've got used to it now, and I'm really surprised.
Anyone here prefer Bing over Google?
I use Bing because it's on my phone.
I mean, I prefer Google because I use Google Sync extensively with Chrome, so I'm always going to prefer Google.
Interesting. All right, well, last word goes to our sponsor, UK2.net, and for that word from our sponsor, we have Alex Fox.
Ah, yes, UK2.net. The network could not survive without them. They pick up all our bandwidth. We'd be finished without them. We have some amazing deals with UK2. Firstly, we have offer code BAGELTECH. So go to UK2, buy lots of lovely stuff so that they know we're sending you. Go through our website and put in the offer code BAGELTECH, and that will get you 15% off your final bill. But don't stop there. If you want to take over a domain name with you, type in bagel DNS, and you will get the charge waived. There's normally a DNS management charge, and they will waiver that for you if you put bagel DNS, and you'll be helping us, them, and yourself, because they're a wonderful company to deal with. They also have, I think it's ending Monday. Is that right, Sarah?
I think that's when it is, yes.
Okay, they have a competition in conjunction with us. So if you go to our website, you'll find near the bottom left-hand corner, you'll find an icon-y sort of thing that says win a Nintendo 3DS, a one-year hosting, or a £25 iTunes voucher. Click on that. It asks you a very simple question where the answer is, if I remember rightly, 2 terabytes, but don't quote me on that. Actually, read the article, put in your answer, and you've got a good chance of winning one of those things. So please support UK2. They keep us alive, and if you like what you hear, go and help them out and help yourself out at the same time.
Definitely. Thank you, Alex. Now, where can we find you guys, James?
You can find me on Twitter. E-R-I-K-L-A-N. Oh, no, that's you.
Wait a minute.
S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y-S-S-G.
And Sarah?
Love that. On the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK. And don't forget, I'm also on the Bagel Tech F1 show, which is normally the day after each of the Grand Prix. So this week, probably going to be Monday night on the Bagel Tech network. That's www.bageltechnews.com.
Well, I think if they're seeing this, they probably know what that is. But yeah, Ian and Alex, are one of you guys or both or none or I don't know what I'm saying on a different show coming up this weekend?
Yeah, no, we're doing going to do photo tomorrow, probably at 4 o'clock. It will be a very different panel, and we're going to do something slightly different because while the cat's away and all that.
Yeah.
So we did Mac today. That was a very interesting show hosted by our wonderful friend Will Green. So you might want to download that one. I won't say too much. And, photo tomorrow will be slightly different. Hopefully it can live up to the great heights that Eric has produced for the big show.
Yeah. And, Alex, where else can people find you?
Well, you can get me on Twitter at Alex G Fox. That's A-L-E-X-G-F-O-X, because apparently we all need to spell things because of Eric's proof to me that it does work. And, get Bagel Tech Photo. If you want any questions answered, write in and we'll do our best at making up something.
And Ian Grant, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me out on Twitter at TIOABOA. Turn it off and back on again. That's TIOABOA. I'll be moaning and groaning when I remember to look at the thing.
great. And you can find me on Twitter at Syzygy. No, ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan. ericlanigan. You guys know how to spell it by now. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And thank you, Ewan, for letting me guest host. This has been fun. And he will be back next week. All will be back to normal. But thank you to James, Sarah, Ian, and Alex for hanging in there. Thank you guys for watching and for listening and for downloading. And we'll see you next time on Bagel Tech Big.